there. You're listening to the Only Schoolers podcast. I'm Gina Prosh, and hanging out here with me as always is my co-host, Kristen Edwards.
I am right here with my cup of tea and a few quiet snacks to munch on while we talk about more of our favorite quotes.
A snack to eat?
Absolutely a snack. I'm kind of peckish this morning. I don't think my cheese cubes and pretzel sticks are going to make too much noise, though. I'll try to keep it quiet. So we've covered a lot of territory so far this season, talking about all these great quotes. So it's time for a snack. And today's a great day to do it because we're talking about food.
All day. Yes, we are. Our quotes today are centered around food. But before we get started on that, let's clean up the kitchen, so to speak, and take care of a few housekeeping details.
Visit us online at www.onlyschoolers.com to find the complete list of hashtag quotes we've discussed in each episode so far. On social media, you can search for our Only Schoolers handle. We are on Facebook and Instagram, so find us both places.
Starting last month, we began What If Wednesdays on Substack, where we answer your what if questions about homeschooling. Subscribe at onlyschoolers.substack.com and send your questions to us. You can reach us at onlyschoolers@gmail.com.
Substack will also keep you up to date on everything Only Schoolers, like our new book, A Homeschool Meditation Journal. It's coming out just in time for the holidays. If you're like me, you buy your own Christmas gifts anyway, so add this to your list.
And please do visit us at Substack and subscribe. Also, Substack has a really handy share feature, so please pass along our what ifs, then everyone will know what your friendly neighborhood Only Schoolers are up to.
Speaking of sharing, thank you to everyone who has been liking and commenting and sharing all our posts on social media. One simple share really helps us expand our reach and it grows the Only Schoolers community.
Okay, done with the details. Now we talk about food. And since we are closing in on Halloween, it is the perfect time of year for some fall foodie fun. What are some of your must-have favorite treats and snacks around this time of year?
Well, we've got to have plenty of fresh, crisp apples and pears and caramel for dipping them in. We also kind of like to make this mix of candy corn and chocolate-covered peanuts. We can munch on that all the time. We make homemade popcorn balls. Got to have those, especially around Halloween. And for drinking, it's apple cider, hands down. We go through a jug so fast, especially when I use it to make my Harry Potter-inspired pumpkin juice, which is so good. And I can put a link on the show notes for that if anyone else wants to make pumpkin juice. But what about at your house? What are you guys eating?
I picked up my annual pumpkin spice latte last month at the beginning of pumpkin spice season. I used to really chug them by the bucket, but over the years I've kind of tapered off a little bit, but I still make sure that I get at least one pumpkin spice latte yumminess dose each year. There are also a couple of church chili suppers in our neck of the woods, so we stop off at those. Rich and Wyatt always get chili, and I always get a chili dog with everything, then grab a slice of pie. At our house, we are really serious fans of pumpkin pie, so we usually do a few of those, and I make a great pumpkin dump cake that's really yummy. That's a October-November thing. For Halloween candy, I usually grab a couple of snacks of emergency chocolate close to Halloween when the candy goes on sale. I know you're all about Mountain Dew, but do you have a favorite candy bar?
Yes, Heath Bar or Score. If I can't find Heath Bar, Heath Bar's my favorite. That is followed very closely, like right on top of it, by the dark chocolate Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. And I know you love iced tea, but do you have a favorite soda or a favorite candy bar?
For most of my life, when it comes to soda, it's been all about the Dr. Pepper. However, now as an adult, I have really developed this strange fixation with cream sodas. I don't know what's going on there. When it comes to candy bar, it was Snickers in high school, but now it's usually a Twix, sometimes a Kit Kat, occasionally a Mounds. Rich and Wyatt are both big fans of the salted nut roll, and they were really excited when those started coming out in the fun size packages a couple of years ago.
Oh, I love this time of year when all the huge bags of fun-sized candy come out. I only buy candy that I like, and I've been known to pick my favorites out of the bowl before the trick-or-treaters come. So sorry, kids, you're not getting any Heath around here. It's no secret that I love to cook and I love to experiment in the kitchen. So, you know, this episode and honestly all this talking about food right now, it is right up my alley and making me want to go cook.
So while I am not as much a foodie as you are, but I have got a young man living in my house and at the rate he eats, oh yikes, when we got started about quotes and after the episode on deliberately encouraging a little bit of chaos, we decided to take our words to heart and branch out a little bit, shake things up here on the podcast.
We have talked about all sorts of things relating to homeschool, favorite books, favorite curriculum. We've talked about extracurricular activities. We've talked about the progression from the grades from elementary through middle school. We've talked about high school. But Gina, we've never talked about food. And honestly, the school cafeteria is a hugely important part of any homeschool. So, you know, let's just kind of poke around. And we started looking for some quotations that inspired us about food.
So our first one comes courtesy of Napoleon, who I don't think we've ever quoted before, who says, "An army marches on its stomach. A homeschool marches on its stomach, too."
Oh, it definitely does. And no, I don't think we've ever done Napoleon, but we are circling back to another one of our favorites. He's a quotable fella, and this line from J.R.R. Tolkien says, "If more of us valued food and cheer and song above hoarded gold, it would be a merrier world." I am a huge fan of the Hobbits and their Elevenses. And Tolkien's line pairs so well with this quote from Virginia Woolf that I believe speaks to the heart of homeschool and food. One cannot think well, love well, sleep well, if one has not dined well.
Truer words have never been spoken. You have talked about your strange love of popcorn and gummy bears. And I'll admit to something of a fascination with really odd foods. Foods from off the beaten track can also make for fun homeschooling. So to that end, here is this quote from Jonathan Swift. "He was a bold man that first ate an oyster."
I remember when you texted me that and I kind of joked, like, Rocky Mountain oyster. Bold and blah. But last but not least, we are going to wrap things up with another one of our favorite fellas, Shakespeare. And he said, "'Tis an ill cook that cannot lick his own fingers."
But for now, we have got our marching orders. So let's get going with Napoleon's quote that a homeschool army marches on its stomach. Let me tell you, if Napoleon had taken a bunch of homeschool moms along with him when he tried to invade Russia, I think things would have gone a lot better for him. Because if there is one thing homeschool moms can do, it is keep the troops fed and watered. I remember being at a skating competition years ago. We're standing around waiting for the skate time to arrive. And it was one of those times like between meals when breakfast, lunch, you know, it's been a long time ago. The next meal's still a long time off. So Miley, Wyatt's Paris partner, she's starving. So I'm scrounging around in my purse and I found a couple of different packages of granola bars. And Miley grabs one and her mom's looking at me. He's like, "See, this is how I know you're a homeschool mom. You make food appear out of thin air."
Yes, because we're magical that way. But seriously, doesn't everybody have a stash of something to nosh on in their purse? Or if you're like me, a selection of tea bags for a quick cuppa when you're away from home?
And if I remember correctly, you also have a secondary backup stash of tea bags in your car?
Yes, I do. You're making me sound weird. But that came in so handy when I switched purses one day and I forgot to switch my tea stash from purse to purse. Car stash to the rescue. Seriously though, food is so vital to a good day, and not just because it tastes good, but also simply from a nutritional point of view. September and I, we are not huge breakfast eaters, but we'll at least grab a piece of toast or maybe some fruit to go with our first cup of tea in the morning. And food is fuel, and our bodies need it to get going. So if you're trying to march through math, literature, and science with nary a snack in sight, at some point, your little homeschool army is going to refuse to follow orders. Physically, they just can't. They need more fuel to keep going.
Truly. And whether it's an army of one homeschool child or a larger troop of 4, 6, or 12s, it marches on its stomach. If you ignore that basic truth, you do so at your own peril, and you will be as successful on an outing as Napoleon was during that little expedition to Russia. You know, from my time serving on the board of directors for our homeschool group, most of the planning for any of the events that we hosted, it revolved around food. What are we going to have to eat and who's going to bring it? Because if you've got that many kids together, somebody's going to get hungry. If you are involved in a homeschool group, here's a little quick piece of advice. It can pay off to be set up as a nonprofit, because that 501c3 status can make a big difference when it comes to donations. Last year, for the back-to-school night, I talked to the local dairy here in Jefferson City. They donated a couple hundred cups of ice cream and all those little wooden spoons for the treats. When it was time for graduation, Wyatt was talking to the local Coke distributor. They donated a bunch of cans of soda for our graduation party. Another handy trick for food that we took advantage of was buying gift cards at Sam's, because one of our local pizza places has their gift cards for sale there. So it's like $45 to buy a $50 gift card. When we went to buy the pizza again, because we were a 501c3, they gave us a discount on the cost of the pizza. So by stacking the gift cards on top of the discount, we're able to get about $150 worth of pizza for $100. Even for all the events that we hosted that were BYOS, bring your own snack, it was so important to make sure there were going to be enough snacks, because a group of kids, it's like those scenes of the locust plagues Laura Ingalls Wilder wrote about in the Little House on the Prairie books.
Yeah, they swoop in, eat everything in sight, and then fly away.
They do, leaving nothing behind them. There's no point in reminding your kid, you just ate a giant supper right before we left. They're hungry again. Is that a uniquely teenage boy thing, or does that work sometimes with you in September?
I hate to sound sexist, but I think it might be a teenage boy thing. Honestly, I'm more likely to hit the snack table than she is. So maybe it's a teenage boy and middle-aged woman thing.
I don't know. Kids are kids. They get hungry. And unless you really do want to be stopping at the Quickie Mart, it is far better for your own personal homeschool army or homeschool group to bring along a stash of snacks or bottles of whatever.
And here's another trick. If you're going to be at a specific location that sells a cup that you can refill for a discount, for heaven's sakes, buy the cup. I mean, our rink cup paid for itself in no time.
Oh, for sure. Ours did too. What was it like? $5 for the cup, and the soda was in it the first time, and you could refill it for 50 cents or something like that. We used it for several years before it wore out, and then we got another one, but that was a great way to save money.
But keeping the troops fed is always the key to happiness, and that is exactly why I love Tolkien's quote. If more of us valued food and cheer and song above hoarded gold, it would be a merrier world.
It would be a much merrier world.
I love to cook. I love to feed people. Nothing makes me happier than seeing people really dig in and enjoy what I prepared for them. I really value the gift that is the preparation of a meal. It's me. It's my hands. They're nourishing someone. And I'm not just nourishing their physical stomach. I mean, that's important, obviously. But I like the emotional happiness, the cheer, as Tolkien says, that I personally get when someone prepares a meal for me. It's like they're saying that I'm worth all that time and effort. And cooking, it can be time and effort. And I want to create that cheer, that emotional happiness for others. I want to let them know that they're worth it too. Because, like I said, cooking and baking do take time and effort. I know I've mentioned this before, but my mom was a home ec teacher, you know, back when those things existed in school. We didn't get frozen pizzas or pudding cups in our house. She cooked, so we cooked, and I continue to cook. Now, September didn't used to care so much about cooking, but with her switch to being vegetarian, she's been a lot more involved in meal prep, and it's often a very merry time in the kitchen while we're trying out new recipes. So what does Tolkien's quote bring to mind for you?
You know, when you're coming home from a vacation or a day trip and you're close enough to home that you think, oh, let's keep driving and we'll just eat when we get back home.
Okay. As soon as you said that, I thought of the meme where the kid asks to eat and the mom's like, no, we've got food at home. And then there's this picture of a hollowed out green pepper with Fruit Loops and milk inside of it. That's the food we've got at home.
Oh, yeah. No. So not a good idea if you, and I plead the fifth here, if you or your child is someone who gets grumpy and snarky when they're hungry, it's not a good idea. Sometimes the very best idea in pursuit of that merrier world is just pulling into the Cracker Barrel. Spend the money and have somebody bring you a meatloaf sandwich and a glass of tea. Especially when it's one of those, you know, today's been a long day, it's the end of a long trip, we're going to have to carry in the luggage and the other things when we get home. So let's just eat a nice meal, and then when we do get home, we're not starving and tired and still needing to scrounge something to eat. Along the life's way, we've tried this, you know, several different times, and it was always just a dreadful end to an otherwise lovely time. So now if we know we're going to be home later than say 5 o'clock, we just build dinner out into the plan, unless I put something in the crock pot, that is. But dinner out, it can even be something here in town as we get back. So we might not have a hoard of gold then or now, but we have learned to pursue a merrier world than trying to save a few bucks going home, eating a frozen pizza or something, and then just going to bed grumpy. Just not worth it.
No, because unless the food fairies appear overnight, breakfast might be kind of slim pickings too. It's better to have a full stomach and a good night's sleep before tackling the whole back to reality bit.
Oh, for sure. It's also why I loved the Virginia Woolf quote that we picked out. One cannot think well, love well, sleep well, if one has not dined well.
And that is the honest truth. I'll find myself kind of working on a project. I'm struggling to stay focused. But if I do a little gut check, usually all that's needed is a small snack to kind of get my brain back on track. And if that's true for me, I know it's true for our kids. And honestly, that's the beauty of homeschooling, that flexibility to stay nourished during class so those little minds just keep on worrying away. They can just nosh and work, and there's no mid-morning or mid-afternoon droopy, hangry kids.
I have always thought it just odd that public school kids are allowed to bring a snack to have during standardized testing so that they can stay focused. But wouldn't the ability to have a snack every day help them too?
You'd certainly think so. I mean, I know it does in our homeschool. And I am counting myself in that group about staying focused. We can be kind of a little bit of a grazer. Little bite of this, little bite of that. You know, we've always got pretzel sticks, crackers, peanut butter. That's easy reach in the pantry. I've usually got, you know, cheese chunks, cheese cubes, some sort of fruit. I've always got fresh fruit cut up in the fridge. If not that, there's always a bowl of apples, oranges, and bananas on the counter. Right now, we've got peaches and plums because it's the fall season. It doesn't take much, but the effect in my brain from a little food in my stomach, absolutely amazing.
Truly, food is an integral part of the homeschool. It is important for our kids to be able to think well, and they need food to do that. I might have been okay skipping breakfast, but school did not go well when Wyatt skipped breakfast. He is a morning person, and he did not think well with no fuel for his little engine. And when we haven't dined well, look, neither one of us is going to be patient and even-tempered in sweetness and light. In short, we won't love well. So one thing I loved growing up was my parents were big on the midnight snack, which actually took place during the 10 o'clock news. Got to stay up and watch the weather. So we would have, you know, a bowl of strawberries, maybe a couple of chocolate chip cookies dunked in milk, or a bowl of ice cream, cheese and crackers. Wasn't a big deal. There wasn't a bunch of cleanup, but it was just a nice little something to tide us over until morning.
I have been known to eat a quick bowl of cereal before bed. Or sometimes, honestly, if I can't sleep, I'll hop out of bed and fix a bowl.
Oh, for sure. I carried over my mom's tradition to our house, and we often have some sort of snack around 8:30 or so because of that sleep well part of Virginia Woolf's quote. Sometimes the dining well thing, though, it can be a little bit tricky, and the definition of well, ooh, that was one of those things that caused a lot of stress in our homeschool for a while. So when Wyatt hit that 11, 12, 13 age range, his skating schedule at the time meant being at the rink around noon for practice and skating lessons, but he needed a bigger lunch. So around 10:30, he would start in with the, "Hey mom, what's for lunch?"
Yes, I know. Kind of a demanding kid you've got there. Mine is too, but she kind of eases into it with, "I know you're busy, but I'm wondering if you've thought about lunch yet." Fortunately, most days I've either got something in the crock pot. As you mentioned, crock pots are awesome. We've got leftovers to heat up. If all else fails, we'll just run out and grab something somewhere, because I've learned that having a lunch plan makes the homeschool day go much more smoothly.
September. Far more diplomatic in her pursuits of food. Now me, give me a carton of yogurt, give me a bowl of cereal, maybe a sandwich. I'm good to go. No midday kitchen cleanup. Just toss the yogurt carton in the trash, stick the plates in the dishwasher. Unfortunately, those things really weren't going to satisfy Wyatt, who wanted, it was what Rich's grandpa and great uncles on the farm always called a working man's meal for the noon meal. A meal, not a lunch. So I got his desire for a bigger hot lunch in order to do well during the afternoon, because like I said, with skating, he was working hard. He's burning a huge number of calories. But that bigger lunch meant getting started cooking something up by, say, 10:30 or so in order to be done eating and then still get to the rink on time at noon. And if his thing was, I need a bigger noon meal. Okay, my thing was and still is, I do not do a big midday kitchen cleanup. It's just a huge no for me. But if I'd skip the cleanup, then we come home, it's 3:30 in the afternoon, the kitchen's a mess, and I still got to start supper in a couple of hours. So Rich and I looked at each other and we realized that we, meaning me, needed to be flexible here. It was going to put a hurt in our hoarding of gold plans, but in this case, and for this time in life, eating well meant going out for lunch, usually at our favorite Mexican restaurant on the days that Wyatt was skating. We would eat a hot, freshly cooked, relatively healthy lunch there. And I must say, talking with the restaurant staff definitely helped him with his Spanish. In that way, it was a bit of an adventure, a learn and eat experience. So speaking of adventure, what do you think about our pal Jonathan Swift and his quote, he was a bold man that first ate an oyster?
You know, honestly, I've had that thought about a lot of foods. Like, who was sitting around and said, wonder if I could eat that?
Have you seen that meme about eating mushrooms? You know, it's the one that says, I can't stop thinking about people that first ate mushrooms they found and just had to go through trial and error, like, oh, this one tastes like beef. This one killed Brian immediately. And this one makes you see God for a week. You know, we laugh about that each year during morel mushroom hunting season here in Missouri. My grandpa, he loved morels. I've never actually been a huge fan. You know, it's like, saute them up and hope you won't be dead by nightfall. Was mushroom hunting a big thing in your family growing up?
Not really. I think my brother and his wife like to hunt mushrooms. I've heard him talk about it at least. But I've never partaken in any of their findings. I love mushrooms. I just tend to hunt for my favorite ones, portobello, at the grocery store.
We are on the same page there for sure. But as I've said before, if it comes time for the zombie apocalypse, I'm glad I got Wyatt on my team because over the years of homeschooling, he has learned a lot about scavenging for foods. If you have a local nature center, be sure to check out the classes that they offer here in Missouri. Oh my stars, the Department of Conservation has nature areas all around the state and they offer classes. Wyatt took a lot of classes with them. He also spent a lot of time outside in the woods with Grandma and Grandpa. He's learned what's safe to eat and what's not. He brought in pawpaw fruit from the trees, actually quite tasty. Gooseberries, wild raspberries. But seriously, he was a bold man that first ate not only oysters, but pawpaw fruit and a whole host of other plants. So Wyatt, he does know better than to try wild carrot, better known as Queen Anne's lace. So during the summer here in Missouri, the ditches, they're full of Queen Anne's lace. At least we hope it's Queen Anne's lace because that's wild carrot. It is a happy, edible plant. You can use the leaves in salads. The seeds are usable, kind of like sesame seeds. The root can be eaten like carrots. But wild carrot looks really, really similar to poison hemlock. There are differences in the stem texture and the color, but poison hemlock, that stuff will kill you dead as a hammer, just like it did Socrates. The alkaloids, those can affect your nervous system. You die of respiratory failure, and even touching the plant can cause skin reactions. And best of all, there's no antidote.
Oh, that is happy news. So Swift is right. He was a bold man that first ate an oyster or mushrooms or hemlock or whatever. A marching army needs food, but let's try to come up with some edible options that keep our kids alive and working on their multiplication tables. What about bold prepared foods?
I love those cultural studies, social studies, history, science, connections to food. And I really hesitate to tell you how much of my life I've spent pondering things like, who, what human being came up with the idea of lutefisk? I mean, why would anyone think, oh, here's some dry cod. I know. Let's soak it in lye until it takes on the consistency of jello. Then we'll rinse the lye out because, you know, lye. And then we'll eat it. It's gonna be great.
Yeah, when you put it that way, that surely happened by accident. Like somebody accidentally dropped it in the washing or something. For me, it's cooking through Julia Child's recipes. And I come across aspic. Seriously? A savory gelatin of meat broth molded with other vegetables inside? Why? That's a hard pass.
I am really with you there. I'll see old ads in newspapers or magazines for aspic. It is nasty.
Yes.
Or what about some desperate starving peasant who said, Oh, I know what we'll do. With this sheep's stomach, let's just take the sheep heart and liver and tongue and mix it up with the onions and maybe some oats. Yeah, oats and seasoning. And then we'll stuff it in the stomach and boil it for a few hours. It'll be great. So, my globe-trotting friend, have you ever eaten haggis? Scotland, it's still on your wish list, right?
Yes, Scotland is definitely on my to-travel-to list. I have never eaten haggis. I'll just cross the haggis bridge when I get there because it is important for me to try the local foods whenever we travel. I'm not going to promise anything, though, when it comes to that one. Kind of like oysters or snails when you're in Paris. I do hear, though, that there's a modern version of haggis that's cooked in sausage casings rather than the sheep's stomach. And there's even a vegetarian haggis, so maybe.
Yeah, fair enough. Now, you guys have a no-chain restaurants rule when you travel, don't you? So how does that add to the traveling experience?
Yes, we do. Absolutely no chains. And it has been great because honestly, we're kind of both adventurous eaters. We're pretty willing to try anything at least once. Obviously, you know, in Paris, crepes, macarons, that's easy to love. The croque madame, pretty tasty too. I've had pasties in London, fish and chips, as well as black pudding. And that is a much more pleasant way to say blood sausage, but it's actually really good. I think eating the local food is the best way to immerse yourself into a new place. It's one of the first things that September and I do when we go to a new city. We research the local flavors, and then we ask the hotel desk, where would they eat? You know, where do the locals eat? And they have never steered us wrong. I mean, we have had some amazing food. The beauty of doing it that way is you can see how food grows to represent a culture, and you really understand why certain regions have certain dishes. Now, by far, New Mexico had some of the best food we have ever eaten on vacation, and we learned to differentiate between Mexican and New Mexican fare in a restaurant. There is a difference. So, lately, we've been on an Indian food kick. Now, we've never been to India yet, but there is a local restaurant that's crazy good. It inspired us to explore Indian recipes at home, and let me tell you, my naan definitely needs a little more practice, but I can make a mean aloo gobi and dal makhana.
I think trying foods that are new to us foods help us to understand the people who routinely eat those foods. I also love big subjects like food and fashion as a lens through which to view history and social studies. One of the most miserable food adventures I ever had the misfortune to be part of was a medieval English dinner in graduate school. No new world foods.
Ooh, no potatoes, no corn, no squash, no onions, chocolate.
No, none of those very tasty foods. And since it was a medieval English dinner, there wasn't even any pasta to save the day. I was tasked with the potato substitute of mashed turnips. And let's just say it was really memorable for all of the wrong reasons. But honestly, I had never been face to face with the blandness of a medieval diet until that dinner. It suddenly made this abstract concept very concrete.
I mean, it really makes you understand why the spice trade was so hopping back in those days.
Exactly. When the Renaissance hit, people wanted to jazz things up because there wasn't a lot of jazz things up in my medieval English dinner. Sometimes there can be a notion that these enrichment activities aren't as important as real learning. Totally reject that notion. It's all one big batch of interconnected learning, which is why during the homeschool years, particularly when Wyatt was younger, we spent so much time in the kitchen. Food is crucial to daily life, and learning about food and food preparation and nutrition was a terrific unschooly way to integrate science, social studies, reading, history, math.
It really is. I mean, one of our favorite memories, I think, was in eighth grade when we studied American history of the 20th century. So we prepared recipes from each decade as we came to them. Now, some of the foods were familiar, others weren't. Tomato cake, it was actually not too bad. But it was a fun way to connect to the shifts in culture from 1900 to 1990.
Never underestimate the importance of the kitchen to your homeschool, because so many subjects came together in our kitchen and at our dinner table, literally. And since we are talking now about getting into the kitchen, let's slide right over to our Shakespeare quote, which is, "'Tis an ill cook that cannot lick his own fingers."
There's really nothing like a quick swipe through the frosting. You gotta check it. But it reminds me of the time Kevin and I are filling balloons. It's September's third birthday party. And we hear this tiny voice going, this cake tastes so good on my spoon. That little rascal had eaten the pink frosting border off one whole side of the Hello Kitty cake that I had labored over till like midnight or 1 a.m. the night before. And she was starting to dig her way into the cake part. Now, personally, I'm all about tasting as I go when I cook, but no offense intended here, Will. I generally use a spoon, not my fingers.
For sure. Cooks who don't want to eat their own cooking are just not to be trusted, which is why kitchen arts are such an important part of a homeschool. If the goal of education is to create responsible, thoughtful, capable adults, then basic skills like laundry, lawn care, vacuuming, cooking, they're part of the curriculum. Now, from your posts on social media, and like you've said, September has gotten way more interested in cooking than she used to be.
Yeah, I mean, she really started getting into it when she made the switch to more of a vegetarian, sort of plant-based style of eating. It's been a learning experience for both of us. I'm a farmer's daughter. There's usually meat in a meal. But, you know, it's been a lot of fun. We've had a lot of fun memories that we're making. We've had a lot of tasty food result from it. We finally compiled all our favorite recipes that we've printed off of websites into our own private cookbook, and I'll have to make her a copy of it when she leaves home. So does Wyatt like to cook?
He's not one of those kids who spontaneously starts to putter around the kitchen, but we spent a lot of time cooking together in the kitchen when he was little, making all kinds of things, and he's been at his grandma's house and helped her bake and whatnot there. So put all that together, and I'm pretty confident he is not going to starve when he lives on his own. He knows how to make crockpot meals, so I can definitely see us giving him a crockpot as a housewarming gift. Spaghetti, that's an easy meal. Same with goulash. He knows how to make mashed potatoes. Steaks on a George Foreman grill, another housewarming gift. But like you always say, he knows how to read and follow instructions. So as long as he has a cookbook or two, he's in good shape. And we've talked about things like cross-contamination, so he knows not to put the cooked chicken on the raw chicken plate and things like that. I think that's one of the biggest wins from the homeschool lifestyle. He knows how to teach himself how to do stuff, and he knows how to ask for help.
They've learned how to learn, and that's the most important education that we can give them, whether it's in the kitchen or the classroom. So what do you think, listeners? What role does food and food preparation play in your homeschool? How do you use food and cooking in your academic subjects to kind of bring them to life? Hop onto Facebook and Instagram. Let's continue this conversation. Our handle is onlyschoolers in both places. And if email's your thing, or if you'd like to send us a recipe, just send us a line at onlyschoolers@gmail.com.
Remember to sign up for our new Only Schoolers Substack newsletter. We started our What If Wednesdays in September. And we are talking about what if our kids do not like history this October.
And we want to remind you to be sure to pre-order our new book. It's called The Best Year Yet. It's going to be available at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, all the other retailers. Just like our homeschool vocabulary book, if you would like a signed and personalized book plate for either of those, just head over to onlyschoolers.com and we'll get you set up.
We know your time is valuable, but if you have a moment to drop a review, we would really, really appreciate it. It would be incredibly awesome.
And if you enjoy the podcast, please consider supporting us financially. You can visit us at onlyschoolers.com and drop a little something in the Only Schoolers tip jar.
Thank you so much for joining us today as we marched our little homeschool army across some fabulous food frontiers. Join us again in a couple of weeks for more quotes.